The people of Israel had descended into some kind of anarchy. And we pick them up as being left wide open to attack. This is the story of Gideon. The Midianite people, neighbours of the people of Israel, eager to take advantage of Israel's weakened state, swarmed like locusts along the eastern borders, leaving no living thing in their wake. Some people thought, including one Gideon, that the people reject God, then they're surprised when things fall apart. As he looked at flames in the distance once again, and another town had fallen to the Midianites. Gideon thought to himself, what do? We bury food in the ground to hide it. We're reduced to living like animals. Why doesn't God do something? In fairness, Gideon wasn't really expecting an answer there and then. However, a voice came to him. God is with you, Gideon, for you are brave indeed. You are a mighty warrior. To say that Gideon was taken aback would be putting it mildly. Brave and mighty? I am up here on top of this hill, grovelling around in the dirt, trying to thresh grain in the wine press so the Midianites won't find it. No, I'm not brave and mighty. Besides, how can you say God is with you? If God were with us, he'd send someone to save his people. The voice said to him, but God will save them. He's sending them, you, Gideon. And through you, God will save Israel. Me? What does he want to send me for? Wait a minute. Who am I talking to? Either I've gone completely mad, or I'm having a conversation with God. Gideon stood up and said to the sky, if this is really happening, if you are God's messenger, then give me this sign. I'm going to leave this fleece in the ground. If in the morning all the ground is dry but the fleece is wet, then I'll know. And so the next morning, sure enough, he came back to where he had left the fleece and picked it up, and it was absolutely soaking. Well, I'd say that was wet enough, he said to himself, and yet the ground around it is as dry as a bone. I suppose that must have been God I encountered yesterday. I'd better get started then. The first thing we do is to get rid of those idols that the people have made. And so Gideon took his servants and he smashed his father's idols to pieces quietly when he was sure no one was looking. But in a small town, of course, secrets don't stay that secret all that long. Soon the townspeople were at his door. Joash, open up before we break this door down. Your son Gideon has smashed the statue of Baal and the Asherah pole. He must die. From behind the door, his father said, die? You're going to kill him because he broke a statue? Joash, you old fool, he's angered the gods. If we don't kill him, we'll all suffer. Joash, his father, said to himself, if Baal really is a god, then he's perfectly capable of fighting his own battles. Are you going to fight for him, you guys? Are you willing to die and defend a statue? That was enough for the townspeople. They went away, muttering to one another, pah, let Baal sort him out, let Baal deal with him. Meanwhile, Joash confronted Gideon. I don't know what you think you're doing, Gideon, but you'd better take more care than that. Don't worry, father, Gideon replied. God is moving through Israel. Things will change. You'll see. Sure enough, within a few short weeks, Gideon gathered enough men from neighbouring tribes to make a stand against the Midianites, and not a moment too soon. "Today," he said to the gathered men, "we fight back. The Midianites have joined with people from the east and even now stand ready to have a full-scale invasion. God has told me we shall win, but we must trust him, whatever he orders. God commands that you drink water before we fight." And so all the men went down to the river, and as they drank, Gideon sorted them into two groups: those who got down on their knees to drink, and those who cupped water in their hands. And it was in this way that God chose the men who would fight. The rest were to return home. Some of the men who were left said, "This doesn't make any sense. Why leave us with only 300 men? This way, everyone will know it was God who saved them," said Gideon in reply. And so the night before the battle, Gideon took his servants, and together they made their way towards the Midianite camp. The servant said to him, "What are we doing this time, Gideon? Smashing another statue?" "Shh! We'll creep up," said Gideon, "and listen to what our enemies say." Two Midianite guards were passing by. One said to the other, "I had the weirdest dream last night. Our whole camp was hit by this loaf of bread, and the whole thing collapsed. All of us were killed by the most stupid thing. You know, I've got a bad feeling about tomorrow. I think God has given us to God, Gideon's army." Later that night, Gideon led his men to the Midianite camp. Armed with flaming torches hidden in earthenware jars and trumpets, but no swords, no weapons of any kind. Quietly now, not a sound. One or two at the back were muttering, "Oh, I hope he knows what he's doing." Silently, they surrounded the Midianite camp in the pitch blackness. Gideon stood up, ready, on the count of three. 1, 2, 3. And on a signal from Gideon, all of his men blew their trumpets as loudly as they could. At the same time, they smashed their jars and their torches suddenly blazing light. And as the trumpets blared and the lights burned, they all shouted, "A sword for God and for Gideon." The sleepy Midianites came from under their tent. "We're under attack! We're under attack! We're surrounded!" And waking in terror, the Midianites assumed they were being attacked by some huge army. Fenced in on three sides, with deafening sound and blinding light, they began to attack each other. Those who had survived fled through the gap Gideon had left, running in exactly the direction he intended, where the rest of his men waited for them. The Midianites had almost destroyed Israel, yet during Gideon's life, they were utterly subdued and troubled no one again.